You're listening to a Count Out Podcast.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Independent Waters. I am your host, Mikey Manfredi, and joining me, not as always, are two very special guests. Of course, we are starting off with our collective weekend review here at Independent Waters, the first of the bunch. And I, Mikey Manfredi, am joined by none other than Sean Taggart from Pure here on the Canon Network.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be here. Excited to be here.
And, of course, Lauren Rosenberg from Your Dose of Death, also from the Canada Network. Lauren, how you doing?
I am Gucci. You know, it is another day in the life. I cannot complain.
Yeah. And we are going to be talking about a couple of shows today. We are going to be talking about Planet Death from the Collective, and we are going to be talking about BLP Norm. Two shows that were both pretty good, both late time slots. Two shows that got the unfortunate time slots, but I think both delivered nonetheless in their own ways. Why don't we get right into it? Which one do we want to talk about first, gentlemen? I know we all watched both shows.
Yes.
So what do we want to get into first here? What do we want to?
I guess we'll go by like
chronological.
Yeah, chronological. So probably Planet Death first.
So let's start off with Planet Death. So we got quite the card for Planet Death here. We got in no particular order, because I can't find a website that has the card in the correct order. We got Sadika taking on Jimmy Lloyd, Hoodfoot versus Madman Pondo, Shane Mercer versus Neil Diamond Cutter, Sawyer Wreck versus Brandon Kirk, Cole Radrick versus Akira, and Slade versus Bam Sullivan.
You literally just read that in like the opposite or the main event to opener.
Did I? I don't know. I literally, It's literally just like the website in front of me has it in this order.
You just read that? Like,
yeah, I just read it backwards. Incredible. Yeah.
You beat the space-time continuum, Mikey. Okay?
Oh, I'm just a god. It's just, listen, it just comes natural, alright? So obviously we're not going to go into detail about all these matches, because we have a lot of wrestling to talk about. I do want to get your guys' general opinions on Planet Death, though. And like, anything that stood out to you particularly?
Lauren, I'll let you go first.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, Mr. YDOD, Mr. Deathmatch Podcast, start us off.
I've had a lot on my mind with this show, because as I've been telling Sean, as I've been telling everyone in Count Out, I kind of consider the show the quintessential tryout of the GCW Deathmatch division. Due to some internal movements, I'm not going to say what, there have been some openings, per se, of guys who can do death matches for Game Changer Wrestling, which again to me is the biggest platform you can do a death match on right now. So this is kind of like a quintessential tryout of sorts. And the thing that kind of stood out to me is some passed with flying colors, but some also failed. And I'm just being brutally honest, because there were some matches on this card where you're just like, why is this happening? What's the reason for this happening? And some of these matches just crashed and burned. But there were some matches on here that if you're like, okay, if you're thinking about a deathmatch match of the year, I can at least confidently name three matches on this card that would be in the conversation.
Okay. All right. I was unaware of all the stipulations of each match. I had no idea. And then when they started announcing them, I was like, man, Deathmatch Wrestling has some of the funniest match names And they're all like so wild. Like thumbtack, kick pad, light tube, deathmatch. Everything you need to know is right there.
You it's see like... nothing until you go to Japan and see the names of Stiff Snare. It's like they take the stiff names and like put on steroids. It's nuts.
Yeah. Boards of Fuckery is also very good.
That's a good one, I agree.
Sean, what did you think about Planet Death?
I think this was the perfect show for the time slot. I think a show like this, you know, you get out the ghouls and ghosts that want to see something like this. It's not for everyone. And I think, obviously, this is also a great introduction for people who don't really want to get into the genre full on. This is a great way to dip their toe in it, because not only are you getting it from the best United States promotion that does it, but you're getting to see some guys that maybe you don't normally see in a GCW ring. A Brandon Kirk, Sawyer Wreck was somebody that I did not expect to see in a GCW ring. Finally getting to see Neil Diamond Cutter in a GCW ring was excellent. Shane Mercer getting another crack at a death match. You know, there was a lot of good people in this event, and it was a perfect time. It was less than 2 hours. It moved. But I think this is a perfect time slot for a show like this.
I agree. I think when you said the show moved and it was under 2 hours, I think that was a very good idea. Yeah. Keeping the show moving, because it started at midnight in Central Standard Time. And for at least me and Sean, that was like 1 a.m. So if we wanted to stay up to watch that match, which I don't think either of us did, it would have been nice to know that it wouldn't keep me up super, super late, you know?
Right.
And I think it running very efficiently was a good move. We'll get into the other pay-per-view that was a little longer a little later, but
yeah.
But I agree with you. I like I am one of the people you were describing where it's like casual deathmatch fans. I'm in that spectrum, 100%. I'm not like you or Lauren, who are both like hardcore into deathmatch.
Sure. And
really, really love deathmatches. I am more of the casual deathmatch fan. I will only really watch a lot of deathmatch events when there's stuff like this. Because for me, it's just the most easily digestible, I guess. And also, I can't watch deathmatches all the time, I figured out. I was watching, like, one or two deathmatches in a card I can handle, but, like, when the whole card is deathmatches, I found myself getting squeamish at some of the points. Especially with, like, the slower spots, like, where they're doing, like, where they're slowly and methodically, like, bopping gusset plates into each other's heads. Ugh. Like, no thanks.
Anyone can handle, like, a gusset plate spot.
That's fair. I mean, like, a lot of, like, the big slams and stuff, like, the big slams through, like, a lot of stuff, I'm like, yeah, that rules! But, like, when it gets to, like, the slow, methodical, like, pain parts, or, like, fucking, like, G-Raver with the tattoo needles in between the fingers. No, yeah. That's not for me. That is not for me. Like, stuff like that, I can't, you know? But I will say, I'm glad it exists. I'm glad deathmatch wrestling exists, because there are people like you guys who love it to death, and there are people like the people in this ring who love it. And the fact that we're able to get Planet Death every year as a little love story to the hardcore fans is really cool, I think. And I definitely had some new names that I am now interested in checking out. Like you said before, Sawyer Wreck. Never heard of her until this event, and I was super high on Sawyer Wreck after this. I want to check out more Bam Bam Pondo stuff, that's for sure. Of course, got to check out more Bam Sullivan stuff. With Clutch Your Nuts.
Clutch Your Nuts, baby!
So, with all that out of the way, what were some highlights and some lowlights of this pay-per-view, do you guys think?
You can go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I think one of the highlights was definitely Akira finally having a match in a proper ring, a proper death match with somebody like a Cole Roderick, who is dipping his toe back into it. I think, you know, he had that opportunity during the first weekend of GCW shows when Cologne had to pull out and he stepped in to face a Horn fight, and he hit a home run. I think him and Akira hit another home run.
I like this match a lot. You're right.
This was my match in the night, and I'm pretty sure it was Lawrence too.
Yeah, it hands down was for sure. I think the thing with Akira's trajectory in GCW has been like a wave of emotions, to say the least. Like, I mean, there was a little mire of controversy come last June, not being TOS, but survived that storm. He ended up coming back. He debuted during Fight Club Weekend, where he was probably the most over guy in a 6-man tag, which was shocking to me. Then challenges Cologne to NGI, debuts again in the deathmatch division of NGI, to probably being there myself, probably like one of the more over guys in that tournament, to then having a bit of a down. The G Raver match was a 20 plus minutes of catastrophe with a tripod ladder that should have never been used in the first place. Let that ladder die and wither somewhere in a corner in the showboat. To now kind of coming back to GCW with this new opportunity to give Cole something to work with, and does so with flying colors. The stip was perfect.
The thumbtack kick pad light tube patch.
Yeah, and they're using light tubes in more innovative ways than I've seen a good 90% of deathmatch guys using now.
There was a lot of cool light tube spots in this match. I'll give you that. There was a lot of creative ways that made me squeal. I was like, oh. Was this the match with the spot where he put the light tube in his mouth and then just like pulled it backwards? Or am I thinking of something else?
I think so, yeah. Akira was eating light tubes during this match, so.
And Cole was cutting himself across the chest with light tubes again.
I don't get it, man. Like,
I'll explain this because, Sean, you know well. Mm-hmm. Both Cole and Akira knew Adam Buehler really well, who passed away during COVID. Mm-hmm. And that was one of Adam Buehler's staples, was that and Jun Kasai from Japan. That was like their big thing, was doing the light tube across the chest. So gotcha. That was Cole Radrick's best imitation of Adam Buehler, who he knew very well.
Okay. That is cool. I do like that a lot. I like that a lot more now, and less of like, but he's like, why is he doing that? Why is he cutting himself? Stop.
Yeah, it's people don't, they see that and they're like, oh, why did it? I'm like, oh, Adam Buehler did it first.
I also don't get when they like break the light tubes over their head. It's like, what are you trying to prove? You're in a death match already.
That's a big thing over in Japan, to show respect to the wrestler.
Bash a light tube.
It's a sign of respect.
Wow, there's a lot of things I'm learning today, thanks to you two. I'm glad you're the guests on this one for Planet Death, because I am learning so many new things and I'm enjoying it a lot. What else? So Cole Radrick Akira was a highlight for both of you, obviously. What else were some highlights?
Another high, so like I just want to kind of put this out there, like the trajectory of the show. So Slade Bam was a serviceable Taipei death match. Like, we've seen Taipei death matches done everywhere. It's a stip that got over first in America if you look back to ECW. So like,
I remember it from TOS 666. That's where I remember I saw my first Taipei with the glass on the knuckles. I didn't know that was a thing before then.
Like, it's been done, and it's been replicated 50 bazillion times to this point, because it's simple to do. It's just the glass on the taped knuckles and all that. Like, this was a service.
Little gorilla glue.
nice little glue gun, you know, the whole nine yards. So, like, Bam versus Slade was good because it had a story to it, which sometimes goes neglected. But really, the most interesting part of this show is, like, if you talk about shows that had a second gear, the second gear came after the opener, and the next three matches were really the best matches on this show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you really hit a second gear here with these three matches. And I kind of wish these three, with, like, Akira Cole, Neil Diamond Cutter, Shane Mercer, and Sawyer McMahon Kirk, were all, like, near the end of the show, because then you'd really leave everyone satisfied. Like, oh, we really got a great momentum here, but
they started hot.
They started really hot, and I'm like, wow, like three matches in a row where I could be like, crap, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. And I mean, kind of the transition to a low point, Hoodfoot versus Madman Pondo was a whole lot of meh.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. I was like, I was watching it, and I found myself like, kind of being like, can we just end it? Can we just wrap it up? Like, yeah, like that's what I was like. Are we still going with this?
It just I mind you, this was a rematch. I mean, Pondo kind of got Hoodfoot on the map for me and Sean's sake with the back in Michigan back in October. I mean, the guy was all over the place. Like, oh my God, he bleeds so well, this and that. But now that Hoodfoot's become a more refined deathmatch wrestler over the months, a match with Pondo doesn't make as much sense anymore, if you get what I mean.
Right, and this match was originally going to be Hoodfoot versus Reed Bentley. Obviously, Reed had to pull out due to, you know, work situation. So, yeah, I mean, Hoodfoot is probably beyond the beginner's guide to deathmatch wrestling, and a Madman Pondo match is a great way to get yourself your toes wet. In this stage of where Hoodfoot is, and a lot of it has to do with his recent GCW death matches, especially the one against Tremont, where he pretty much proved to everyone out there that he deserved to be there. And in the GCW deathmatch division, like, honestly, if you look at the way that TOS is shaping up, this could be a very stacked TOS 7, just based on some of the names that we're going to be seeing in there. I feel as if, too, like people are expecting the thick blood from Hoodfoot, but he's more of a bleeder now. So it's not, you know, that thick crimson mask over his face as what we saw when he first started. So, like, there's that. But to go back to a high point real quick, I mean, I've watched Sawyer Wreck in No Peace Underground in the No Ring Deathmatch scene. To see her perform and given the spotlight against a guy like Brandon Kirk, who is known more for like the battering ram, you just throw him around, you just beat the shit out of him, and he sells like $1 million. He sold like $1 million or so and made her look like a star that night.
Yeah. An image I'm always going to remember from this collective is Sawyer Wreck getting her hands raised with a $2 stapled in her head. Yeah. That was really good. The dollars that Brandon Kirk stole out of the ref's pocket.
No, so I've been super high on Sawyer as well. I mean, yeah, as Sean said, a lot of us watched her kind of grow in No Peace. She's been there for a while. And again, I think No Peace gets flack because it's a no ring promotion. They kind of started the whole no ring deathmatch craze, and it's kind of skyrocketed in 2022. But the good chunk of people who worked at No Peace, you see them out working the rings elsewhere. And Sawyer's a really good testament to that. And again, I mean, she's tall, she's intimidating, she can do almost universally anything. It's crazy how good she's gotten. And I mean, this is a very slow, methodical paced match. It was not like your super junior heavyweight death match. It was like,
and this is where I figured out that I was like, oh, the slow spots are what gets me. Like, because this match was slower and more methodical paced and less like
gusset plates,
crazy slam spots.
The gusset plates on the arms, that I've seen them on the head, I've seen them on the back, but on the arm, Brandon Kirk is a trooper. For taking those,
dude, I had no idea what honestly before death matches I had no idea what the hell a gusset plate was, and I looked one up and I was like, that's what's going into their arm? Are you kidding me? That's what they're just hammering into each other? God, man, it is wild the pain tolerance these people have.
Just another high I want to put out, someone who has become a very good friend of mine, Neil Diamond Cutter. Getting his, first of all, to put it in perspective, he was supposed to be debuting with old-timer Jeff King at Detroit NGI weekend against Alex Colon and Takeda, but Neil had an injury as well as Jeff King, so the two of them got withdrawn from the show, and I was really bummed because I was like, Neil's been working so hard to get to this kind of point. He's, as MLJ announced, the original prince of the death match. He won 2021 in St. 8 last year. I was proud enough to be there. And now being here at GCW, against a guy who he's very familiar with in Shane Mercer, put on a great match, a great first time. If you've never seen Neil Diamond Cutter, a very good like first timer match with Shane Mercer. I mean, Mercer, there's not much else you can say about it. He's basically
he's Shane Mercer. He's going to throw you around and carry you up a ladder. The fact that he just like put him on his shoulders and just like just strolled up a ladder. No, it's like Shane Mercer is not a human being. Shane Mercer is not a real person.
And remember, Shane Mercer is that dude that carried a whole bleacher on his back.
Yeah,
a couple years ago.
In
Summit Park, he carried a whole set of bleachers against Jake Atlas and a bunch of other people. And
fucking crazy. I remember
seeing that clip through a friend of mine, and I'm like, that's got to be gimmicked. I thought it was BS. I thought it was and they're like, no,
he's just that big.
It's just that strong.
If you've ever met him, that's a guy I've met in person where I'm like, okay, he's the real deal. It's not BS or gimmicks. Like, he legit is an Olympic level power lifter.
Right. And I think that's it was a good introduction for Neil too. Neil is a very good underdog coming back from behind wrestler. And I think putting him in the ring with Shane, who just will ragdoll him around.
Yeah.
You know, this was a good showing for Neil and a well-deserved showing for Neil, who, you know, for a while was forgotten about. Let's be real. Like, people forgot about him. And then he had that resurgence during COVID year with
Insane
ICW 20, and the ICW.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's redefining himself and refining his career, and it's paid dividends.
Yeah, very happy with that. I mean, it takes two to tango, they say, in professional wrestling. And I mean, for as good as Shane Mercer is, Neil Diamond Cutter is a great dance partner in himself. And also, who doesn't love Sweet Caroline at like
that was
past
so
midnight?
Good.
It's like I said it to a friend. I was like, you're at the bar past midnight, but there's glass flying around and you're hearing Sweet Caroline in the VA system.
I feel like a lot of like watching this is for later in the week, but watching like also the clusterfuck, it made me realize that a lot of GCW wrestlers like theme songs are just like straight off the playlist songs that make white people go crazy.
I mean, true.
I'm not gonna lie there either.
And it's all very good. I was actually jamming to I found a playlist on Spotify that's just a bunch of GCW theme songs, and I was jamming to it.
I think I saw that playlist somewhere. I gotta look that up again.
There was two. One of them didn't have Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, and I was like, this playlist is garbage.
This is not a real playlist.
No. Get this out of here. But it's a good playlist. It has a lot of it has the classics, you know.
I do want to go to a low point. And
I was actually about to transition because we were talking very highly about this show. So, I was actually about to transition into some of the lower points.
A low point that I had, and I think Sean can agree with me, is every time I see a Jimmy Lloyd GCW main event, and I mean no disrespect to Jimmy, half the time I feel uninspired.
Are you trying to fuck with a different boy?
I'm not trying to fuck with the Hurt Business. It's just... One, Jimmy's like my sacrificial lamb of deathmatch. He's usually in there to put someone else over. Or like if he wins, it's to advance a story, but it's very rare. So he's making everyone else look good. But he's making Sadiqa, of all people, Sadiqa, try to look good. Which, by the way,
I
lost any, if zero interest in Sadiqa.
I would say I am going to need some background on Sadiqa. Because I'm gonna be real. I knew nothing about Sadiqa going into the show.
She's a coked up bear.
All right, that's all I needed. Great.
John Wayne Murdoch.
Yeah, Murdoch coined the term after working her several times. Where one, we should mention that she has been notorious for injuring her opponents. Yeah, she's like notoriously like shot at her opponents, and it's like this whole mystique of like, oh, be aware of Sadiqa. Where in America, it's just kind of like
you're being a douche. It's hard
to replicate that mystique in America because everyone's like,
stop injuring people.
Yeah, and she's just done some things where it's just bizarre, and her run in GCW has been a roller coaster.
It's been bizarre,
to say the least.
I mean,
the Schlag match where she asked for a translator and is like, I want a rematch with Schlag. And everyone's like, oh, yeah. And then like Schlag's like, screw this, I'm leaving.
She is Deathmatch Hogan. Like, she must get the last say. She must pose regardless if she wins or loses. She must have the final word in everything. I've noticed, especially with her GCW run, like, it's a very weird run. This started, I think, some of the injuries creeping up back on Gage after he had a brutal match with her up in Houston last year. Then she had the Schlag match, which was crazy and a little absurd at the same time. And then you go into this match, and I mean, she does what she wants, and it kind of takes away, and it took Jimmy out of this match because he didn't know how to contain and control her at points, because she's just doing what she needs to do.
I think the ironic part is, like, her and Jimmy worked together before, but it was in like a steel cage match with like two other people. But again,
where it's easy to kind of like do whatever, right? Because it's a cluster. It's a fuckery anyway.
It's like this. This is the best way to kind of describe it. It's like, I don't think she really knows the cues of working with American wrestlers, even though she's been here. She's done at least a dozen plus matches in the States now. And again, coming from Mexico, coming from Zona 23, she had this whole mystique about her. Like, oh yeah, she goes crazy. She does all this nuts stuff. She's like DDT'd someone through a car. The car's like front window or whatever, because Zona 23. And it's like, now it's like the mystique is absolutely weared off, and I just do not care to see her in a GCW ring again. I'm just sorry.
This weekend being my only exposure to Sadiqa, I think I saw her twice this weekend. I didn't get the hype. Like, I was just like, she's fine. Like,
that match against Pagano is also peak Sadiqa.
Yeah, and I will say this, like, that match showed Pagano was leagues above her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Pagano understands how to work the deathmatch style, and yet I kind of wish Pagano was on Planet Death instead of Sadiqa, because at least Pagano, we could get some awesome matches out of him. I love Pagano. Mm-hmm. I think he deserves a lot more respect, but I mean, I know Sadiqa has the Texas crowd behind her, and she gets over, and the crowd loves it, but it's like, if you actually sit down and watch her wrestling without even listening to crowd reactions, it's like, what am I watching here? Is it just like some shoot fight with glass?
Yeah, it seemed kind of, I feel like I was underwhelmed, I guess, because I didn't know like the mystique and the history behind Sadiqa. So I was kind of going in blind. And since I went in blind, I was like, her match just kind of fell flat for me this week, or this weekend, I guess.
They fell flat for me too. I mean, the Jimmy match, I feel right off the bat, just didn't have cohesion. And like I said, it could be the language barrier. It just could just be Sadiqa wanting to do what she wanted, and Jimmy just, like I said, didn't know how to rein her in. And
there was nobody. Nobody was being the ring general in that match. They were just doing right.
And that it just does not equate to a match worth. Sure, you can watch it one time for the sake of watching it, but it's like, you're not going to sit there and be like, oh, this is something I'm going to go back and watch. This is just, again, with Jimmy, I love Jimmy. He does his job in GCW, but this is one of those matches where I left uninspired. I was like,
I am just excited for the day Jimmy Lloyd gets his flowers at AEW. That's all I'm saying.
Let's see what that is.
All right, anything else on Planet Death? I think we're good. I think we talked about a lot.
Yeah, just kind of an end note, really. I mean, again, for me, this was a quintessential GCW Deathmatch tryout, as we've kind of already discussed. This was some passed, some failed, some kind of were in the middle, and some would have benefited from other opponents. Uh-huh. I think is really. I do want to see Sawyer Wreck back in the GCW ring. I think her and Masha Slamovich in a death match, which. Me and Sean have seen Masha do them before. I think those two could rekindle a rivalry in GCW, and I think no one would be disappointed in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, I want to see Neil again in GCW, and I think I think Cole Radrick, his trajectory has absolutely skyrocketed after this weekend. Not even just doing death matches, but just in general, Cole Radrick is a name to keep an eye on. I hope the collective as a general was kind of a coming out party for him.
Yeah, I think after Cole and Kira's match, my first thought was, I cannot wait to see what Cole does next. That was like literally the first thing I thought. I can't wait to see where he goes from here. Sean, any last thoughts on Planet Death before we give it the old Indie Waters rating, since this is still Independent Waters and we do need to give it the old Miss Out Met or Mark Out rating?
Sure, I will say great pacing. I think it helped with having, you know, not too over-the-top stipulations so they could just clean up and bring out for the next. So they really paced the show well. I think you saw a lot of standout moments from Sawyer Wreck, from even Brandon Kirk in terms of his selling ability for Sawyer. And then obviously, you know, what's there not to love about Akira and Cole Radrick. You know, definitely some low points too. I feel like some misses definitely in the final two matches of the show. Mm-hmm. But that middle third was something
really
else.
Good. All right. So if we could give this whole pay-per-view a rating, what would you give it a rating based on the Independent Waters scale?
Can we get a re-clarification on the scale again? Just
miss out, bad, terrible, don't watch it. Meh, good, not bad. You should go check it out. Mark out, fucking amazing, awesome, thrilling, 10 out of 10, 6 stars, you know, that. But me and Zach have been doing kind of like also high meh and low meh between like it being like okay, but on the better side, and okay, but on the worst side, you know?
I'd say a high meh. I think it's definitely a show to definitely... The first four matches definitely were serviceable. And, I mean, again, the opener, it's a Taipei death match. It's been done. And this one had a story to it, which, again, is sometimes hard to come by. But those three matches, I mean, it's that 1, 2, 3. I mean, it's can't miss stuff. So if you want to get your death match fixed in for WrestleMania weekend and you want to actually see what Planet Death's all about, I mean, it's definitely a high mat.
John?
I'll go with a high bet too. It's a great introduction to deathmatch for those who aren't heavily, you know, in the deathmatch scene or watching a lot of deathmatch. I think it's a good starting point if people are curious.
I am on the same boat as you two. I enjoyed the show very much and I really liked it and it kept my interest the whole time. There was some low points, but hey, not everything can be a banger all the time, right? So like sometimes you just kind of understand. And yeah, I think I'm going to go with the high man on this one too. Definitely worth checking out the whole show. And, you know, some stuff isn't going to land, and that just happens sometimes. All right, so why don't we move on to the next show we all checked out, which was Black Label Pro Norm. This was also a late show. This started at 1 a.m. Eastern time. And it went what, like 2 hours and 45 minutes, something like that?
Yeah, 2 hours and 45 minutes. I should confirm that Mikey of Black Label Pro did confirm the reason it was named Norm was after the late, great Norm MacDonald.
Norm MacDonald.
It was confirmed, because people were confused, but I'm like, it was a Norm MacDonald tribute, uh-huh. Okay.
Good to know. Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, again, the card in no particular order. I might read it backwards again. Who knows? So we had a singles match between the Barbarian and Calvin Tankman, Billy Starks versus Shawn McKenzie, Effie versus Charlie Haas, Kobe Durst versus Jessica Troy, Big Damo versus Warhorse, the Workhorseman versus Davey Richards and Mike Bailey, Anthony Green versus Alex Zane versus Black Toros versus Blake Christian, a 6-man tag match with Carlos Romo, Kevin Blackwood, and Titus Alexander versus Violence is Forever and Tom Lawler. 6-way scramble match between Cody Lane, Dan the Dad, Devon Monroe, Jody Threat, Puff, and Shane Sabre. And a Texas death match between Levi Everett and Big Beef. Got it that time, I think.
Yeah, so they lost two matches and added 4.
What two matches did they lose?
So they lost the Workhorseman and Faces of Fear. That got transferred to Workhorseman versus Davey and Speedball. And then they lost PCO and Jake something for the title match. Both got injured. I think PCO during the Multiverse of Matches show for Impact. And I think Jake got injured right at the Glory Pro show.
I think he did, yeah.
Oh, yikes.
So he was out early. And then they added Kobe Durst, Jessica Troy, and
there was Tyus Alexander. I don't remember Tyus Alexander coming black.
That was supposed to be Titus replaced Davey in that match. It was supposed to be, and then Romo replaced Matt Mikowski originally.
Yes, because Mikowski's hurt. That's right.
Yeah.
Why don't we just go? Why don't we talk about this card a little bit? What were some stuff that stood out to you guys?
So I'm just gonna say this is the wrong time slot for a Black Label Pro show.
I agree.
I don't think they did very well once when they were in Chicago for the second Cine Summit with like the midday 3 o'clock show.
They also did very well in the collective in 2020 when they were in Indianapolis when they had
they had the noon show.
That show smacked. That show was really good.
So I mean, they're a promotion that you have to be wide awake for. I think like the crowd was very drained from 3 days,
and there wasn't a lot of them.
There wasn't a lot of them. I mean, people either were still stuck at AT&T Stadium.
Or just crawling into it from AT&T Stadium.
Or just sleeping because it's been a long weekend.
Yeah.
So, like, that was probably some of the biggest things against them. I would say, you know, in terms of shock factor, Mikey has the ability to put on some zany matches like a Barbarian Calvin Tateman. Which was serviceable based on what you're seeing from Barbarian. Now it was a good brawl around the ring. I mean,
and I'll never say no to a Calvin Tankman match, man.
I won't. Yeah. Never say no to that. I mean, you're seeing the opportunity for Calvin to probably just have a fun match, really just let loose. And he had fun with it. I mean, against a legend like Barbarian. Charlie Haas was absolutely hilarious with
his. He was amazing. Oh my God.
That was a good match.
Racking up.
The countdown with the like five, and then one was like the double bird.
And then he's like, stop cheering for me. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Like, don't cheer for me. So, and I think, you know, it was this Effie had a straight up match. This was like serious to the point and short enough where you can get in, get out. I think where things got a little weird for the show was when they went to the tag match and then the final few matches on the card.
I agree with you. The end of this card, I was watching this maybe at like 5 p.m. and I was still just like, by the end of the card, I was around the tag match. I think in the middle of the tag match, I like dozed off for a second. Like the tag match was just slow, and like, I get it. It's their style because it's like Violence and Forever and Tom Lawler. They're gonna be slower paced wrestlers, but like, still, it just felt like it dragged on.
This was kind of a story of like two different halves of the show. I mean, looking at this card, I mean, Barbarian Tankman was a ton of fun. Billy Starks being a heel is still kind of weird to me. But
I like Veda Scott calling her Bully Starks. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I enjoyed that too.
I mean, it was awesome seeing Shaza back in the States. But Jessica Troy, I love Jessica Troy.
Oh, really, seeing Jessica Troy on this card was a wonderful surprise.
And I had known she was in the States for me a week, and I'm like, how is she not getting all these bookings? Like, she's one of like the technical artists of Australian women's wrestling. She's one of the best kept secrets, in my opinion, honestly.
If you, just for the fans out there, I know YouTube probably have, but if you have not seen the series between Jessica Troy and Charlie Evans, do yourself a favor and go fucking watch it. They're all so good.
Yeah.
They have great chemistry together.
They do. And I mean, it was also very nice to see Kobe Durst, somebody that you haven't really seen since the pandemic. Like, man. He made an appearance for Freelance a month ago, but yes. It's nice to see him being able to come regularly, hopefully again down to the States and wrestle in that Indiana, Chicago, Midwest area. But it was nice seeing him on this card. I will say, though, like you said, it was the tale of two halves. During the middle of the Work Horseman Speedball and Davey match, I was like,
that's when it kind of started, like,
and it was like still a good hour and 20 minutes left of this show.
Yeah.
And I mean, you had a good four-way with like Anthony Green, Zane, Blake, and Black Taurus, which is, again, shows my
that was nice. That was a That was nice.
Mikey's not afraid to, like, put out, like, zany matchups like that. But then, like, to me, where it really started falling off was the six-man. That six-man, that got so much time. I was dozing in and out. I'm like...
That got so much time, and it felt like for nothing. Like, there was no, like, wild... It felt like there was no, like, wild spots they were, like, trying to make time for, or, like, any, like, big crazy... It just felt like... It could have been 5 minutes shorter, and it would have been the exact same match.
You think about it too, and Veda mentioned on commentary, it looked like both Ku and Dom were just like not really excited about this.
No.
Just, I think they were tired. I mean, they came over from, or had to go over to New Texas because they were wrestling over there as well against Fly Def. So like they were exhausted. And I mean, at the same time too, no one cared about them turning on Lawler.
Yeah, that was like the one thing where I'm like, oh, they turned on, so Team Filthy's no more. Okay. But like, we're just doing this to a crowd of like very few people that just.
People who are just over this match already and want to see it. And now they're adding another storyline to it. Like, it's
over this weekend, even. Like, most of these people were tired of this weekend, and maybe some of them had one more day left. But like, just a bad time slot. Hopefully, you know, they're doing that mini collective in Vegas, and hopefully Mikey gets the big shot of this one, because they can't, like, imagine that, getting like a midnight time slot over in Vegas.
That's rough.
Yeah, what is that mini collective in Vegas? I did see another promotion doing that. I think PWL is part of that.
No, Pro Wrestling Revolver.
PWL is doing something in Vegas soon, I remember.
It's Revolver, GCW, and Black Label.
And I believe are the future three. Stars of wrestling.
And Future Stars, so it's those four. And Revolver, I mean, that's Sami Callihan's promotion. They've come back post-COVID, and they've looked very good in the shows they've done so far. I mean, if you see the next show they have coming up, I mean, it looks like a hell of a show.
But, you know, we praised the first show a lot, and we're shitting on this show. So let's talk a little bit more positive about this one, I guess.
Good call. I was about to say the same thing. Let's talk some highlights of Norm. Because I don't think it was all bad.
No, it wasn't. Billy's progression as a heel, I think, and I don't think it's so much of her being a heel. I just think it's her wanting to be taken more seriously now.
That makes sense.
She put it out there before the collective that her goal next year is to be in Bloodsport.
Ooh.
Josh Barnett saw that and said, "I'll keep an eye on you, kid." Now she's trying to do whatever it takes to get into something like a Bloodsport, and she wants to be taken a little bit more seriously. She doesn't want to be the kid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She wants, you know, she'll be 18 soon. I mean, like, this type of thing, this is important to her. Like, she's continuing her development. And I've said this on, you know, previous and even in conversations, Billy from the collective 2021 to the end of the year, two totally different wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
And even looking at her starting in 2022, she emotes better. She sells better. She locks up better. She does all these little things better that, you know, I don't think she was doing well yet. I mean, obviously, she was still very young, but she's picking it up rather quickly. I feel, and I've had this discussion, I feel like, you know, a comparable wrestler to her right now in terms of young female wrestlers is maybe a Sky Blue. Yeah. And I think, you know, she's still getting it, but she has a more national stage to, like, figure it out, which could be a detriment at times because, you know, the microscope is more severe.
But Sky Blue also had a banger of a match this weekend with Jamie Hayter.
She did.
Yeah, she did.
But you look at it, and you look at her trajectory, Billy, it's nothing but up from here. And I mean, she's getting put in these situations to succeed. She's put in the ring against Deonna the last JCW show and looked very strong against her and held her own.
Mm-hmm.
Last BLP show, Rachel Ellering. This BLP show, Shazza. And the progression of her matches and her wanting to be taken seriously, the sky's the limit for her. I mean, there's only one way to go, but up for her. Not to mention her Beyond match against Kimber.
Yes. I was going to say, I echo all the sentiment with Billy. I mean, It feels weird because, I mean, we've kind of adopted her here in the Midwest. Like, she's kind of like the new Midwest quintessential pro wrestling woman. Because I've seen her almost everywhere, BLP, Warrior, Freelance. I see her everywhere these days. But it's an improvement night and day with her. Mm-hmm. It's really remarkable. And the thing that really makes me happy about her, she has a great support system around her. We've seen the stories of younger wrestlers, and sometimes things go sideways because sometimes it's just not a good support system. Mm-hmm. She has like the best support system. Shout out to Mouse, who's like the absolute coolest guy. The whole Big Starks brand thing, which has grown into a whole thing. Which
it is wild to me how big Big Starks brand is now.
It's crazy. And but that's going off the fact, like, Billy herself has improved night and day. I mean, mind you, last spring break, she wrestled Starboy Charlie in like kind of like the futures match.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's like doing all these other matches. She's getting booked everywhere. It's to me, I'm so happy. I remember.
And now she's healing it up against Shaza McKenzie.
Bully Starks is gonna get a
Bully Starks
pop out of me every single time. I don't know how else that's gonna pop me.
Yeah, I agree. I think this Billy Shaza match was really good. I enjoyed Billy's heel work. I enjoyed Shaza being like, being the face, quote unquote, and just getting like tricked and shit, getting falling for all the heel shenanigans, you know.
But also at the same time, it was funny seeing Shaza like completely shocked by how Billy was. Like, yeah. Shaza is also a very good seller and emotes very well. It's very nice. It's like Lauren said, it's great to see her back in the States and really taking over around here because, God, I mean, I know
we got to watch her beat the shit out of Joey Janela, which was awesome.
That was like full circle Joey Janela Spring Break 3-6 in like the span of a few years. And you're like,
it felt like Janela. It felt like during the greatest clusterfuck, Janela was just like pulling spots from like the other spring breaks.
The greatest hits.
Yeah,
I thought that was like Janela's finest work.
I'm surprised the blow up doll didn't come out.
No, Yoshihiko.
Yoshihiko. I was surprised. I was like waiting for it. Anyway, we're not here to talk about spring break. We're talking about Norm. Billy Stark, Shaza McKenzie was really good. I think for me, another highlight was Kobe Durst, Jessica Troy. I thought that match was short, sweet, to the point. Great. Great stuff. Great.
And like I said, it was great seeing both of them in Dallas. I know Jessica had her match against Rachel Ellering earlier in the day at that US vs. the World show for WrestleCon. Mm-hmm. But like Lauren said, why wouldn't you, like, this is a wrestler that should have been booked more. I feel, you know, Jessica's a very underrated technical wrestler. I think this was a weekend for her to showcase and get her name out there a little bit more. And I don't know why more promotions weren't able to book her. And good on Mikey for giving that last second booking to her and Kobe, too, because they put on a really good match. And
yeah, they killed it.
Hours notice.
Really? And yeah, they killed it because I know they killed it because this is around the point where I was like, I was maybe starting to feel a little tired, and then they picked me right back up and snapped me right back into it. This match was really good, and it held my attention and made me be like, all right, this card's not fucking around, you know.
Just want to say I never get tired of seeing the Workhorsemen work. I'm just going to say that. I love what the Workhorsemen do. I know this is not like their best work. And I think, again, this is kind of...
This tag match was fine.
Apered. But like the Workhorsemen, I've seen them put on some fantastic matches in the past. It's great to see JD Drake and Anthony Henry tag team once again. I thought they're one of the better tag teams on the indies. Just very unsung heroes of the work. And I mean... the team of Davey Richards, Speedball Mike Bailey. Talk about a zany tag team match. First time ever.
Can we talk about Mike Bailey? Nine matches? Yeah, right? Something like that? Ridiculous. He's making... this man... Like, how did he keep going this weekend?
Did
unbelievable.
Did the $5,000 go to him and Bandito?
It was, I think it was like split, like yeah, it did. The $5,000 went to the two, or it was $2,500 each.
Sure. So that's how he kept going.
That's fair. But like, damn, dude, Bayley was all over the place this weekend. He was wrestling everywhere.
And that's a all guy.
And all of his matches were at least good. Like, it is ridiculous how he just kept going and going and going.
Hey, Mikey, isn't it like what you said a while ago where you're like, I think he signed a deal with the devil to not have a bad match?
Me and Batista on this show, on Independent Waters, every time we see a Mike Bayley match, we are convinced he has signed a deal with the devil to where he is... physically cannot have a bad wrestling match. It is impossible for Mike Bayley to have a bad wrestling match. We are convinced. It is ridiculous how good this guy is.
I mean,
I believe it's unfair.
It's unfair to see, like, and the matches that he had this weekend, just to talk about Bayley in general, were, you know, up and down the different styles and different style of opponents. Like, you know, he
is so versatile.
Just, I'm disappointed that we didn't get the PCO match, because I think that would have been just insane. Just
that would have been some just of the crazy spots
between the both of them and what he could have done with PCO. But I mean, him and Jordo put on a good match. I can't argue that, but the tag match, this tag match was fun. I mean, the crowd got into it once the opening riffs of Brass Monkey dropped. I mean, you know, it's always going to happen, but I can't talk enough about Bayley either, and I...
Bayley's ridiculous, man.
It's unfair.
I remember getting... watching my first Mike Bayley match and being like, this is a guy I cannot... I could... And after that first match, like, for maybe a week, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was like... I did a... this is all the way back when Mikey's Indy 500 was a thing, which was, like, the precursor to this show, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... it basically just did... a handful of matches, and I reviewed them by myself. And one of the first matches I did was Mike Bayley versus Walter from Riptide. And that match still sticks with me to this day, because this is when I finally, like, also this is like when I got my foot into independent wrestling, because that match was the first time I've had such a visceral and like emotional reaction to a wrestling match. At the end of Bayley Walter, I was in actual literal tears. Like, I was bawling my eyes out, and that was the first time wrestling has done that to me in a very long time, because this was like when I was just around the point where I felt stuck with WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that match, like, made me be like, right, wrestling is good. Like, wrestling rules, and it doesn't have to be this garbage all the time that WWE is shoving down my throat. It could be good, and it could be great, and it could be Mike Bayley versus Walter, and it could make me cry like a baby. And that's why I like Mike. Anyway, that's why I like Mike Bayley. Because, man, since then, I just could not get Mike Bayley off my mind, and he has just been killing it ever since. And every single match I've seen him in has been an absolute banger to have.
Some of my favorite Bayley matches were his run in CZW against AR Fox.
Oh, man. Those were so good.
Bayley versus Keith Lee from Progress was another really good one. That one fucked.
I remember...
Bayley and Matt Riddle had an awesome match as
well. Yes, they did.
I remember first getting into him. This is really bizarre. But it was when the former WCPW... now known as the defunct Defiant.
Defiant, yeah.
They had that Pro Wrestling World Cup, and Speedball was on Team Canada. And I forget who he faced.
O'Reilly he faced.
And that 2017? Was fantastic. That was a fantastic match.
We literally just watched that match last week on Independent Waters.
Oh my god, like, are you serious?
We just watched that match, yeah. Because we did the Marty Snow interview, and we asked him for one match recommendation before he left, and he recommended that match to us. And we watched it, and it was phenomenal.
It's so good. It is so good.
So anyway, back to Norm.
I guess,
we gushed about Bayley, yeah.
Yeah.
This match was Mike Bayley's tag match was fine. It was good. Yeah. It did its job. I want to talk about Big Damo versus Warhorse, because I'm a big Warhorse mark. I love Warhorse. Like ever since I saw him for the first time, I was hooked. Like I was like, this is my kind of stupid. Like I love stupid shit like this. Like just a guy who bangs his head on the turnbuckle and is like long hair, rock and roll, just talks in all caps. I'm like, I love this man. And I really liked War Horse's match. Like it felt like a War Horse match, and it felt good. And it he may have lost, but like it was still. I thought it was still pretty good.
I think BLP brings out the old Warhorse, and Warhorse, whenever he has a BLP match, it feels like, you know, Warhorse from like 2019, 2020, when he was still, you know, a decent wrestler, but like he leaned into the comedy pretty much a little bit. So like this, every time he goes to BLP, I feel like he leans into that side a little bit more than
saying, and that's the Warhorse I like.
Let's then compare it to him in Glory Pro, where he's part of Team Ambition with Davey Richards, and he's a little bit more, he's still in the face paint and everything.
He's more serious.
He's more serious. Mm-hmm. He's more, you know, fine-tuned in his wrestling. I think when it comes to, like, Warhorse itself, a lot changed for him since that Cody match on Dynamite.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of, you know, hard conversations happened. And it's nice seeing him progress as an in-ring worker, but I'm also glad that he didn't fully shy away from what gave him the popularity and this character's that. So it was nice to see that come out here in this match. I think Big Damo was the perfect opportunity for him, you know, because he was going to get thrown around by him. He was going to get, you know, slammed into turnbuckles. So he was able to, you know, dial into that a little bit more than I would say than he has been recent months.
Mm-hmm. Definitely agree with that. Lauren, any thoughts on the Warhorse match?
It was good. I mean, yeah, I think Sean really kind of hit everything on the head with him. Yeah, with BLP, I remember seeing him at BLP when he was first kind of getting over, but he wasn't like at that top tier level yet. Mm. We were like, oh, Warhorse, this Midwest guy. He seems kind of cool. Ooh, he rules ass. He does all this stuff.
He rules ass.
And he seems to kind of be more into that. Yeah. He's more into that with BLP. But, I mean, yeah, Big Damo, I mean, another guy I remember. And from WCBW as well, another guy from that era of things. And it was good to see him. I mean, his new look is...
I kind of miss the Van Halen one. Like,
the hair. I miss all the locks of hair. It's, like, gone now. And I'm like, where did that guy go? But I guess... with new and greener pastures, things change. So it was good to see Damo in this one. Yeah, it was a good Warhorse match, though. I agree.
Yeah. I also really enjoyed the Fatal 4-Way.
Yeah.
I thought that was a solid point in the night. I thought that was a good match. It did its job. It got me back into it a little bit because it was just like fun, high-flying shenanigans, you know? And then also Black Taurus just wrecking people. The opening of this match was very funny with Zane had the big red coat and he was like, "Olé!" Like that was hilarious.
Yeah. That's a guy who didn't get as much bookings during the weekend, Alex Zane. I was kind of surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
I agree.
I was surprised.
He did have that phenomenal opener on Supercard of Honor, which swear, but like
I need to watch Supercard of Honor still.
Fantastic, but aside from the fact, Zane is a guy I've always enjoyed watching. I never get tired of him.
Yeah, same for me. Same for me. That's Blake Christian for me. Blake Christian is a guy I never got tired of watching.
Same.
I will say both of them got their legs back under one another after getting the release from WWE. It's finally nice to see them back.
It feels like they're back to themselves.
Yeah, they're back to themselves. So it's nice to see that. And this was a fun match. I particularly enjoyed the comedy aspects of the scramble. Puff me coming too. Out with the... the sleeping
bag. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Cody Lane getting put in the sleeping bag.
Oh, God. I love Cody Lane.
I love the five-way sleeper hold.
Me too, yeah.
Dan the Dad
is great.
He's that guy who has somehow found his way as a comedy wrestler, and his comedy sticks. Because you've seen comedy wrestlers come and go, and in the modern era, you don't really see an emphasis on that. But mm-hmm. Dad has somehow kept it fresh. I was going to recommend the Glory Pro match.
Well, because dad humor and stuff like that is at an all-time high now. Like, think about the popularity of the dad bod. Thanks very much, by the way. I needed that self-esteem boost. And think about, like how people are, like, groaning about dad jokes all the time, right? Like Dan the Dad saw that and was like, got it. Like, and that's where he went, and that's where he stuck. And that's where he succeeded, because that's where he saw that all that stuff is popular. And he went for it, and he's become great at being wrestling's dad.
Ethan Page would like to have a word with you, because he claims that he came up with it for him.
Wait, who was it?
Yeah,
Ethan Page.
Oh yeah, I heard that story.
He had a match in BLP for the rights to Dan the Dad's character back.
Yes, right.
I didn't know that. That's funny.
I was gonna say the other Dan the Dad match. I don't know if anyone's covering Glory. Oh, actually, the How to Talk to Your Friend About Wrestling ladies are talking about.
Zach and How to Talk to Your Friends About Wrestling. I remember that show.
They're probably gonna talk about the Cody Lane Dan the Dad match, which I thought was the best match of that show. Just gonna say that.
Mm-hmm. It was lighthearted and exciting, so yeah.
Yeah, speaking of Zach, I forgot to mention, obviously he's not here, because I was going to throw it in the beginning, and then I completely forgot.
Zach is the invisible man for a hot second.
So the reason Zach's not here is because we decided that we would split up. We had a lot of guests, and a lot of guests wanted to watch a lot of different wrestling shows, and me and Zach didn't think we were going to be able to watch, like, I think it was like 8 or 10 shows that everyone wanted to watch all together. Mm-hmm. So we were like, here's what we're going to do. Let's split it up a little bit. So Zach took a handful of shows. I took some shows, and then we're going to do an episode together later in the week. Go check out Zach's episode, which is coming out on Friday. And then the one with the normal Indie Waters crew, me and Zach, will be back on Sunday to talk about a few other shows. But we'll get to that later. Let's finish talking about Norm. What did we think about the main event?
It was fine.
Fine. I mean, I think
I'm glad about the only one you thought. I'm not gonna lie. I have only seen Levi Everett in comedy matches, so when they were like, yeah, Levi Everett's here and he's in a Texas death match, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, they treat Levi a little bit more seriously in BLP, which is very odd to me, because you know, AIW, GCW, he's more in like scrambles, multi-man matches, and then you have him churning the butter, and then
he shows up, does his spots and leaves.
This was interesting, and he's not a bad wrestler in any means. It just didn't feel right seeing him do all this.
It felt weird. Dirty. It was like, damn, this. At points, I was like, okay, this match is getting intense, and then I would look at Levi Everett and be like, oh yeah, there's like just a random Amish guy in the ring.
Like, Levi Everett. Amanda knows Levi Everett.
Yeah. I don't know. Part of me wishes he would just get some gear. that's not his.
I mean,
like,
he has his gear. I don't know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He got me there. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I wish for like bigger matches like this. He had an actual gear.
The funniest thing about this match in particular, this is like 3 or 4 years in the making, because Beef with the help of Mickey Knuckles attacked.
Oh my god!
Levi Everett after a match, like I think they were tagging, they lost. Mickey came out and told Beef to attack him, and Beef did, and then nothing happened.
Wild.
Yeah, no, literally, like it. Nothing. It was 2 years in the making.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Nothing happened.
It was during COVID. Like Mickey Knuckles made a random appearance at Black Label to the pop of very little. And then it's like, oh yeah, like there's this rivalry, and it's like, oh, we're gonna do like a Texas death match. And I'm like,
2 years later,
this one to settle it all 2 years later. And of course, Levi Everett did end up winning.
Good for him. I mean, I'm happy the two of them got this main event. I mean, again, story.
Cool. It felt, I will say, as the main event, it felt weird to me.
As the main event, it felt weird, but like, you lost your title match. I mean, you could argue maybe you could put another match in that spot. Maybe the tag match, not the 6-man tag, but like Workhorseman and Davey and Mike Bailey.
Yeah.
But like, I feel just because like the cleanup aspect of it. They just wanted to end with the big
That makes sense. Yeah. Let the Texas Deathmatch go last so you don't have to worry about rushing to clean it up. That does make a lot of sense in terms of production. But is there anything else anybody has about this card that you want to talk about particularly?
Like I said, just a very bad time slot.
Even watching this at Sunday morning, it felt long. It just, BLP, it's fun to have them in the GCW Collective Lamb. It just was not the right time slot, but there was still some good stuff in this.
I agree.
There was just that weird, it was really a tale of two hats.
Yeah.
With this show.
Yeah, there was parts where it felt like it dragged on, then there was other parts where I was like, I'm into this. This is cool. They're doing it like, I feel like that's kind of been from the BLP stuff I've seen, that's kind of been like my same feeling is like some stuff rules and other stuff is like
blah. I don't think this is hidden.
Like I don't know. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, why does BLP need to have 10 plus match cards all the time? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I know Beyond does it too, but Beyond's hit different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
If you look at how they run their shows in FET with the four-way tag matches, like you get into parts where the show flows correctly. I don't think with some of the BLP shows, I don't think they flow right.
Yeah.
No, I've always had that issue.
I agree with you on the Beyond thing. We've watched a ton of Beyond it for Independent Waters. That's kind of like one of our go-tos when we're like, fuck, where do we get up? I don't know what match I want to watch. Beyond Wrestling, what do you got that's new, you know? And every match I've seen of Beyond has been decent, and I feel like a lot of them go very smoothly and aren't very clunky at all. There's been a couple of tag matches where I've been very impressed by how well all the spots go and how well they flow through the match and how nice it all is.
I will say this past run of Beyond shows made me fall in love with Mio Cool Generation, and I slipped the other tag team name from my mind, but Trayvon Jordan and I forget their tag team.
I wish I could help you, but I didn't see the most recent stuff. I'm sorry.
No, that's fair.
While you're looking that up, Lauren, you want to give me your rating for BLP Norm?
Low meh.
Low meh?
It's just, again, tale of two halves. I mean, the first half of the show definitely was more attention grabbing. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just tapered off and then it just kind of sunk a little bit. But again, there's highs, there's lows, there's stuff that'll stick, there's stuff that won't. More Jessica Troy in the States, please. Please, please, please.
Agreed.
Please.
Hard agree. Jessica Troy needs to be doing more matches.
Yeah. Arm Collector, duh. Barbarian Tankman was a very serviceable opener.
I agree. I think a big Hoss match was a great way to start this card.
I mean, it's Barbarian for one. The guy, like, if you want a guy to pop your crowd, you go to him. I mean, he'll take the crowd shots. He'll heckle the crowd. He'll do all this stuff. And you're like, why isn't there more of that in wrestling these days? You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Sean, any luck?
Waves and curls.
Nice.
Oh, waves and curls.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I will give this a meh. It had its moments. I can't give it a low meh because like what hit really good, obviously what didn't, not everything hit bad, but some stuff did. Mm-hmm. Very fun first half of the show, though. That kept me sports entertained.
I think I'm with you here, Sean. I'm going to go with a meh. I thought it was pretty solid. Like you said, whatever hit, and then there was some stuff that didn't. But the stuff that hit, a little bit to me outweighed the stuff that didn't.
Same.
All in all, it was an enjoyable show. So I'm going to give it a meh as well. All right. Well, that is both of the shows we were talking about this week. That's everything we were covering on this special episode of Independent Waters for the collective. Next episode, you should tune in, which comes out in two days on Friday. Where my co-host Zach Batista, who again isn't here, but it will be on Friday, with special guests such as Amanda and Ashley from How to Talk to Your Friend About Wrestling. We got this. Y'all are gonna hate. What the hell is Curtis's last name?
Curtis.
I don't fucking remember. I always forget.
It's just Curtis. Let's go with Curtis.
Yeah. Amanda and Ashley from How to Talk to Your Friend About Wrestling, Curtis from Okada Shorts here on the Countout Network, and Ryan Knightsy. Duh. I was like, who is Zach Batista's third guest? I can't remember.
Curtis Spears.
Curtis Spears. Thank you. And of course, Zach's other guest is none other than Ryan Knightsy, and they're going to be talking about Glory Pro, Bloodsport 8. And
for the culture.
And for the culture, thank you. Wow, I'm so glad you know this better than I do. but yeah, they're going to be talking about those three shows. So if you want to go hear what those three shows are all about, check out the next episode coming out on Friday. And on Sunday, me and Zach are going to be back to normal with just us, and we are going to be talking about some of the shows we want to check out from the collective: The World on Lucha, Big Gay Brunch, and Spring Break. So go check that out on Sunday and stick with us all week for more collective coverage and fun reviews. So let's get to the plugs now that mine are out of the way. Sean, what do you got?
So on Monday, I released my review of Super Card of Connor. It was a great...
Still a very good name.
I know. Never will get old of it. Ring of Connor, you know, all that stuff.
Ring of Connor,
the Tony Khan puns with Ring of Honor. I talked about that show. And then yesterday, I was part of Hot Shakes and Hand Dogs on the Mr. Warren Hayes YouTube channel.
I'm sorry. Can you roll that back?
Yeah. Hot Shakes and Hand Dogs.
Incredible.
We talked about a little bit more of our favorite moments from all of WrestleMania weekend on the independent scene, not just the collective. So check that out. Plus, I might have an article on some must-watch matches from Media Weekend, Collective especially.
Which you can find on countoutpod.com.
Yes, you can.
Lauren, what do you got?
So, your Dose of Death podcast. I'm going to be kind of doing like an introspective of all the death matches that happened during Media Week. I know we did talk about Planet Death.
Knowing our after the schedule we just talked about earlier, it's kind of weird. I feel like it's weird that we're plugging Your Dose of Death that also came out today. Don't plug it. I just think it's funny.
But there is bigger news. I know if any of you saw my Twitter, I have been in negotiations for a co-host of Your Dose of Death.
Right, we did have some talks about that. We're not going to reveal yet.
Talks in negotiations. We're going to give them a nice Cody Rhodes-esque WrestleMania return, or I should say entrance of sorts,
entrance,
with Pyro and all that. But anyways,
is that in the budget?
yes,
It's in the budget. It's in my T-shirt.
Budget. I'll make sure it's in the budget. Yeah,
it's in the merch budget. That's
it's in the merch budget. Yeah.
But you know, anyways, I'm really excited for me to reveal my co-host soon enough. Next Year Dose of Death episode, along with Planet Death, I'm gonna be kind of doing like a review of all the other death matches. There were some good ones. Again, Mania weekend, there was a lot going on, and I'm just happy that it was a substantial amount of crowds this time around. And also just make sure if you want to pick up merch, go to Deathmatch Worldwide, and also be on the lookout for a potential new merch design. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. So obviously, go check out what everyone's doing. Lauren's YDUD episode should have dropped with this one if I did everything correctly. And of course, Sean's stuff should already be out. So go check all that stuff out, and go keep listening to Independent Waters for the rest of this week. We got a lot of episodes coming. We got more GCW Collective to talk about, and more special guests to welcome onto the show. So don't go away. Stick around. This is weird doing the sign off without Zach. So this is where I would usually say, there's a gigantic sea of independent wrestling out there, and then you guys would respond, and then Zach would usually respond with, "So never stop exploring." If you want to do that, we can. I just feel like it'd be wrong to end an episode without it. So, with all the things out of the way, remember, there's a gigantic sea of independent wrestling out there.
And never stop exploring.
Nailed it. Bye, everyone.
This has been a Count Out Podcast.
Hi, guys. This is Lauren.
This is Michael.
And this is Your Dose of Death Podcast. If you're genuinely curious about the world of deathmatch wrestling, look no further, as me and Mike have you covered on all things in the world of deathmatch wrestling, whether it's
interviews,
show reviews, or everything in between. We have you covered on all things deathmatch wrestling, whether it's past, present, or future. And you're probably wondering where you can go support us. You can find Your Dose of Death Podcast on all major podcast platforms, especially along with the Count Out Network of Podcasts. And also, you can support us on the Count Out Patreon, as we have exclusive content only on the Patreon for all of our listeners. We hope that you go listen to Your Dose of Death Podcast very soon.
And see you at the shows.